one podcast, mining the Magic the Gathering community for salt. This is the Howling Salt Mine.
It's the Howling Salt Mine. The Howling Salt Mine.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Howling Salt Mine podcast. The podcast where we delve into those salty, salty minds of the Magic the Gathering community, find the saltiest stories, the salty posts that we love, put them in our mind cart, and bring them right back up to you, our dear prospectors at home. As always, I'm your host, Sam, and I'm joined today by my singular co-host, Mike.
That's me.
Say hey, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, indeed. And before we go any further, you know we got to do it. We got to shout out our nice tier patrons. That's right. And this week we have Alex Balix, Cream Bean, Hephaestus Bolts, Prime Speaker Florian, Yafe Judge, Dr. Black, Accidental TPK, and Royal Flood. Thanks for being so nice, everybody. Really appreciate the support.
Nice.
Before we dive into things, yeah, Tony's not here. He's finishing up the musical.
He's breaking his legs.
Yeah, he's breaking his legs.
Completely shattering them.
And not saying Macbeth while on stage, which is a bad luck thing. Don't do that.
I can't believe you said it, dude. Aren't you supposed to call it the Scottish play?
I'm not on stage, dude. I can say whatever I want, man.
Yeah, fair. Fair enough. Yes, well, he's off being a companion in company. That's the bit there.
That's the musical.
So that's good. And yeah, I hope it goes well for him.
Yep, me too. But I will say, even if Tony was around, he wouldn't be invited to this episode.
No, because this is a special one.
Because we're talking about Punt City and only Mike and I were there.
No Tony's allowed.
Yep.
Strictly forbidden.
Yeah, he's not here and he can't come.
Nice.
Hey, Mike.
Tony's not here. Someone's got to do it. We both got to pick up the slack.
It's not the only thing I'm picking up. No, I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm saying. I just figured I'd like put an innuendo on whatever I was saying at the moment.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, and I'll also say, if this is your first Howling Salt Mine episode, this is not our typical content. We love to do these like trip report kind of like weekend recaps. So you can sort of go through the weekend with us and we can kind of relive it a little bit. But check out some of our other content, especially if you enjoyed this episode, or, you know, if you really want to have that first taste of Howling Salt Mine, if this is your first episode, like, you know, maybe jump to another episode and get some of that like goofy, salty story stuff that we normally do. This won't quite be the same.
We did just have a great time down in Punt City 3. So that's what the ep is here. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, just like how we love to do after all of our convention visits and trips and fun things like that. We are here to do a breakdown of all the fun that we had this weekend, a quick recap of this lovely event. And listener, if you have no idea what Punt City 3 is, this is a CDH tournament put on by TopDeck.gg, formerly known as Eminence. And I don't know how many players they had, like 200 players, I think.
I think it was about 180.
Yeah, I think we had 180 at the end of it there.
186 players registered.
There it is.
Two had zero games in their record, though. So
wow, a couple hard scrubs, to know. You know?
Yeah.
Couple stinkers.
On one with an unknown commander. Interesting.
That is actually really weird. Interesting. Huh.
Interesting.
But yeah, this is a tournament down in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philly. And it was a really awesome time. So at the start of the year, if folks will remember, we had talked about wanting to do more CDH tournaments and kind of get into that since we're taking the format more seriously these days and just really loving it and jamming more games as often as we can. You know, we were really talking about this the other day and like, what's your casual CDH split, Mike? Like in your heart of hearts, I think you were like an 80-20 or something.
I think if I really had completely my way, there would be periods that are like 90-10.
Yeah.
Where like I did not play casual.
the whole
the
weekend.
weekend down there.
Yeah.
The whole weekend. Yeah. And that was fine. I was loving every minute of it, you know?
Same. Yeah.
I do like casual. And there's definitely, like, if we're just hanging out with the four of us for a weekend or something, I know I want to get some casual games in because I have so much fun with casual, with like just the guys, just very beer and pretzel style casual is great.
Definitely.
But competitive, it just scratches that itch that I have when I play like 1v1 Magic too, where you're like, this is a complex situation and I want to figure it out and do really well and try and make the best out of like all these cards and everything that's going on. And then it still has that little bit of political element thrown in there too, which is interesting.
Yeah, it definitely does. I agree with you. I think the more and more that I play CDH, the more I find that that becomes like the format that I want to play the most. I think it's the one that I want to brew the most too, which is like a huge factor for me, because when I do get in these modes where I want to brew casual, and when I'm doing that, it's like the proportion flips. I want to play a ton of casual because I have new brews and I want to jam those. But more often than not, I'm theorycrafting CDH things and brewing on my list that already exist and like swapping cards in and out. And, you know, like the last few weeks, you and I, since we both played Sisay in the tournament, you and I have been like constantly talking about like card selection,
just nonstop,
and like mulligan decisions and things like that. And that's kind of like the deep theory of EDH that I really love to talk about. And I find that those conversations are more prevalent when you're playing CDH.
Which I think is neat because, like I mentioned earlier about like it feeling similar to 1v1 formats in that way, those are some of the things that you think about when you're doing like very optimized play in like a 1v1 format. I think it's one of the reasons a lot of like 60 card players often enjoy CDH when they start playing EDH.
Definitely.
It like you're looking for those little optimizations of like, what does this mulligan look like? What are these cards that are very close swaps with each other? Which, you know, you only have so many slots, and that's how it starts to feel in like the deck list, which is very, again, similar to like 60 card decks where you have even fewer slots. You know, you're running like eight, like four ofs basically.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is.
Yeah. And sometimes like the narrow decisions you're making are just what goes in the sideboard and shit like that in a 60 card format.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a while since we, it's been a while since we talked about this on an episode, but the brewing joy of CDH, I think sometimes we talk about like brewing joy, and in casual, there's so much expression that you can do with your commander decisions, the cards that you're picking, the strategies you're going into, the power levels you're choosing. And, you know, you have a ton of cards to express that joy with. In CDH, the brewer's joy really comes from, like, depending on the deck you pick, a 10 to 20 card slot. And that might be, for some lists, that might be overly aggressive, you know? Yeah. Sometimes it's like 5 to 10 cards.
It varies greatly by the commander. Like some are very toolboxy and you can go a lot of different directions with it, particularly if they're very generic. But some of the very specific styles of play, they need to stick with a certain kind of core of cards in order to hang with everything else that's going on.
So let's talk real quick just about like CDH tournaments in general. So this was not your first CDH tournament, Mike. This is your fourth, I want to say.
Yeah, I think this was my fourth. I've played two online, maybe three online. I always forget. And then one in person in Salt Lake City at Summit. And then this was the fourth one.
And this is my first one. I never got a chance to do any of the Mox Masters. They're not doing them anymore. And, you know, I think I talked about it in our Summit episode, but there's kind of like a scheduling snafu that pulled me away from that CDH tournament. So this is sort of my first time jumping into that competitive tournament scene and, you know, kind of trying to see what I could do. And, and I got to say, just like flat impression right off the bat, it was so fucking fun.
Yeah.
I didn't win any games. My record was trash, but I had so much fun and I was very confident in the decisions I made. I felt good about the hands I kept, like the mulligans I did. It was a very like validating weekend as a CDH player, because sometimes your opponent just has it and they dumpster you and you can't do anything about it. And you're sort of like, well, this wasn't a failing of my decisions. This is just like how the cards fall. The majority of my losses came from that, except for like one game. I always felt like I had a chance, you know? And as a person who's new to tournament CDH, it's a very validating experience to go through that and come out even with a bunch of losses and feel great about it. And I think just before we dive into anything, I just want to say that, like, if you're out there and you're getting into CDH, or if you already play it a bunch with your play group and you haven't considered, or you want to consider a tournament, but you don't feel ready enough, just fucking go for it. Like, just do it, because it's a multiplayer format. You're going to have that table talk. You're not truly out there alone. If you know your deck well enough and you can at least play your deck, then you're going to have a great time. And there's so many other elements to a tournament like that that I think you kind of have to experience to sort of understand. It's just, I guess what I'm saying is, like, just go for it, pull off the Band-Aid. Even if you don't think you're ready, just sign up for one and get a taste of it. And I think that you'll find that tournament CDH is very similar to just like goobering around with your buddies and playing CDH at the kitchen table. It's a little bit more clean and you don't get your take backs and stuff like that. But at the same time, like, sometimes you just play a game and the vibes are great and everyone's just like joking. And, you know, they're definitely tense games. And I had a couple of those. But for the most part, it's just very laid back and fun.
Yeah, you find that generally, again, you're playing a format with a bunch of people that like it enough that they've paid to be there.
Yeah.
So like you're getting people that genuinely want to play. They want to play high level. They want to play interesting games. And, you know, there are people that aren't very good at handling competition in a graceful way. And there are people that really want to win things.
Yep.
And both of those can make tensions run high at times. But there's definitely just like a lot of good games to be played. So, yeah, I agree. I think it's an excellent event. I want to shout out that this is like maybe a slightly different experience from some tournaments. As we mentioned, this had like 180 players. So it's going to vary a little bit from what some of the more local tournament experiences are going to be, with like 60 players, for example. But I think mostly that would have to do with like the duration of how long the tournament needs to go in order to do enough rounds of Swiss, which we can get into. There were 7 rounds of Swiss for this tournament, which, if people don't know, that's like a round robin portion before it cuts to the top 16 people based on record. You can start seeing by like rounds 4 and 5, roughly, where people are points wise. And then people will start kind of dropping out because they know that they won't get there. And you get points 5 for a win and 1 for a draw.
Yep.
So the tournament report is available on EDH top 16 if people want to look at it. It's kind of interesting to do it. There was one person in top 16 with 3 wins and 1 draw, and everyone else in top 16s was 3 wins and 2 draws or higher. So that's like roughly where you needed to be in order to make that top cut. So it's very interesting having that kind of long section of Swiss that makes up a majority of the tournament. You know, there's 7 games in that and then just 2 games in the like elimination bracket.
Yeah, and it's an interesting process to experience it, because as you're going through it, you're kind of like keeping tabs on who's doing the best, how you're doing in the standings, and what you need to get there. So, you know, after getting a couple losses, you're like, well, I got to win the next like 2 or 3 rounds, or I have to win like 2 out of the next 3 rounds to have a chance to catch up with everybody else and have a chance at that top cut. So it's kind of a game in itself where you're looking at what your next matchups are and either, you know, trying to go for the win or sometimes even trying to just go for a draw so that you can have a chance to get into that top cut and hopefully have a chance at the top final table.
Yeah. There's a whole part about like drawing out once you have those 3 wins. If you're in a pod of people with 3 wins, you're benefited to just take a draw with each other at the start of the game. So there's a whole thing about that.
The people intentional have a lot of, draw, the ID.
The ID. People have a lot of feelings about that, which is fine. But I don't think we'll get into it too much right now. But there's a lot that other people have said on it already. But it is an interesting component as well.
Yeah, and I'll just say that there's a shit ton of CDH tournament sources out there. I mean, this is just our recap of the weekend. If you really want to like dig into CDH tournament play, you know, of course, check out our friend Comedian MTG. Check out some of the stuff that like Wounded Satellite does.
An extra bonus shout out to Wounded Satellite for giving me the absolute littlest die that I could ever receive. And I'm so happy about that. We'll talk about that later in the episode. But
yeah,
shouts out. That's great.
I'll shout out Memo as well. There's just a lot of people out there making CDH content. And if that's something that you're curious about, there's like CDH content in like gameplay, like stuff that Play to Win does. And then there's like tournament CDH content, which is like what the meta is doing, how to play through these tournaments, what's doing well, what's not, and kind of more like tournament theory sort of stuff. The Mind Sculptors do a great job with this as well. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there. You're getting the Howling Salt Mine version, which is going to also include what all the fun stuff we did this weekend.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we're going to do this how we normally do it, where we go kind of day by day. Obviously, we're going to spend a lot of time on the CDH games that we played in the actual tournament. I have a few that I really want to talk about. I have some that'll be like a 5-minute quick gloss over. But before we get into any of that stuff, let's talk about Sisay for like 5 to 10 minutes.
Great. one of my favorite things to do.
So Mike and I both brought Sisay decks. So Sisay Weatherlight Captain, it costs 2 and a white, legendary creature, human soldier. Sisay Weatherlight Captain gets +1/+1 for each color among other legendary permanents you control. And then it has an activated ability where you can pay Wooburg, search your library for a legendary permanent card with mana value less than Sisay's power, and put that card onto the battlefield. And it is a 2/2. So Sisay Tutor Chains is kind of like the general archetype of a Sisay deck, where you are using Sisay's activated ability to tutor up specific legendary permanents. Generally speaking, you're looking at legendary creatures and legendary planeswalkers for your different lines. Yeah. And those will compound on each other. For the most part, Sisay involves having a mana source and then a reset step. So you have a mana source out on the field, and then you tutor up something that will reset your mana source so you can tutor again. Yeah. And you kind of leapfrog and chain together those tutors until you get infinite mana or near infinite mana, and then you can assemble some kind of combo to damage your opponents or mill out your opponents or what have you. Like, there's a bunch of different angles you can do once you get to that final step. It's really a toolbox commander when it comes to CDH, where there are so many different ways to build it.
Some of the examples of those like mana sources are like Bloom Tender or Dockside, and then you reset those with either like an untap effect like Derevi for the Bloom Tender or a blink effect like Aminatu for the Dockside. So you're kind of going forward with one of those two like mana and reset pairs, basically, which is interesting too, because those can both get stacked out, which was very common, I think, in the tournament from what I was seeing, which was interesting. So you have these kind of fixed lines, but you don't really run quite as much interaction, and you're not as like crazy on all like the best cards because you have to run some of these slightly awkward tutor pieces.
Yeah.
It ends up playing like pretty well, but it needs to have interaction at just the right time, and it's not going to be able to like police the table like a lot of the other control decks are going to.
And it's often a deck that can win on the stack because you have an activated ability to win. If you're not doing planeswalker lines, generally speaking, you can attempt to assemble some kind of win on top of someone else's win at instant speed. That's one of the things that I really love about it. And I do love kind of how convoluted the different loops can be, because more often than not, it isn't as straightforward as having your mana source and resetting it. Usually you're leapfrogging through a bunch of other steps to build up mana. Like, I might try to get a Kinnan out on board first so that I can produce even more mana off of like the sources that I already have on board. Or maybe you're going to try to get an Agatha's Soul Cauldron out, because now you can spend mana as though it were mana of any color to activate activated abilities of creatures that you have. So you don't have to have Wooburg, and you can, you know, tap a Gaia's Cradle or something like that to activate Sisay. So there are these different slots that you put in the deck to help kind of leapfrog your way through those tutor chains and get to your win con.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Mike has been playing it for a really long time, and I picked it up pretty recently. But having seen Mike play it for like a year or more, I am also pretty confident with the deck. So it was a lot of fun to pilot it. I think it was almost even more fun just to nerd out about it with Mike in like the weeks beforehand and the weekend of, and like really talk through our plays and, you know, what we were coming up against, because we kind of had very similar play experiences when it comes to, you know, piloting the deck into the meta that was present at Punt City 3.
Yeah. We spent like a majority of the drive down. Maybe not a majority. We spent a good chunk of the drive down just doing mulligans in the car with like with Moxfield open, just like hitting new game over and over and deciding whether or not we'd keep the hand, which was great.
Yeah, which was a ton of fun. And we're probably like 10 cards off of each other, maybe 10 to 15 cards off of each other.
We could always go into that eventually if we if we have the time. But let's get into like, so I drove down to Sam. Alan went over to Sam's.
Yep, mental misplay, Alan.
And I started down. We hit the road at like 11-ish from Rhode Island and just started trucking. Did a car stream at one point, which was a blast.
Yeah, always a good time with the car stream with Alan. So hopefully some of you tuned in and saw that. I'm sure it's up on Alan's Twitch stream or maybe even his YouTube if you want to check it out. Very safe. You know, I'm focused on the car. I'm focused on driving. Al is in the passenger seat with the camera doing his thing. But that's always fun. It's super fun to travel with Alan because he kind of brings those, like, he makes it an event.
Yeah, he brings this energy to it. It's great.
Yeah, definitely. And then at a certain point, we were just goldfishing hands for like 2 hours. And Alan was in the back seat of the car just taking a nap. We watched like a comedy show. We listened to some music. We just gabbed the whole time. And we also hit like 3 hours of fucking traffic.
Yeah, it was pretty savage. We had time to do all those activities because the road granted it to us. So kind of the road. We did manage to get down there by like six and drop our stuff off. And then we went to celebrate with Lua for her birthday.
Yeah, I went over to Lua and Ian's apartment because it was Lua's upcoming birthday. So we had a little party over there with a bunch of friends. And that was a great time, man. Super good crowd over there. A bunch of pals, you know, other CDH players, just people who happen to be in the area and stuff popping in. Super, super fun. And that's also where we had our first CDH game of the weekend and where I got the saltiest.
Sam got to have two CDH games that night. And I had one of the longest CDH games of the weekend.
Oh man, I got so fucking salty. That was so bad, dude.
Yeah. I was tanking a little bit too much and it put Sam right into a bad mood. And then we just were playing a long stacks game and it was pretty rough.
Yeah, it was like a 2 hour stacks game. And my game prior to that had been like a 15 minute, like super snappy game.
Yeah.
And playing into the hard stacks game after that was a bit of a bummer when, you know,
we wanted to hang out and spend some time with everybody. And we did just pretty much play one game the whole time. But
yeah, I will just apologize again to Charles, the mono white guy, because I fucking salted off. And I think I was saying it later to you and Alan. I was like, I don't think I've ever gotten that salty at someone who isn't Tony, Mike, or Nick. Like that level of salt is usually reserved for, like, you know, my core pod, and it leaked out, you know. Turns out suppression field on the battlefield when you're playing Sisay Tutor Chains makes it fucking hard to win, man. When the activated ability costs two more mana, whew, and it makes it hard to pick up your lines, which is why you were tanking so bad.
Yep. Yeah, it was rough, but we made it through it, and the game ended, and we still got, you know, we still had some time to chat with Ian and some other folks that were there, which was really nice.
Yeah, it was great. Like, Bufftown Bullies were there, a bunch of awesome, dope people were there. Got to hang out with Kai, Fervent Alchemist. Just got to meet a bunch of people that we like were aware of in the CDH scene, but hadn't really met in person yet.
Josh from Elder Drunken Highlander was there.
Yep, got to meet Max, Wounded Satellite, and Yoggoth came through. Tim Gold Sabertooth and Kev and Dan Modanon was there. I mean, it was just like all the homies were in town. It was fucking sick, man. And you know, that was like the whole weekend. Like, we just kept bumping into people and hanging with friends. And that really is the best thing about conventions and tournaments is you'll like make a friend, and then you see them at the next one, and then you see them at the next one. It's just like, every time it feels like a reunion, you know. You just get to hang out with everybody, and it's so, so fun.
Yep.
Also, Lua has the fucking best cats, dude. Like,
oh my god,
I gotta like cover up Zucchini's ears because Zucchini is the best cat in my heart. But Zucchini does not like other people. Zucchini loves me. Like, she loves Caroline, but she really loves me.
Yeah.
She tolerates no one else. She's the epitome of a COVID cat. Hates everybody else.
Yep. Mine as well. Mine as well.
But Lua's cats, Jin and...
Miri. Jin Gataxius and Miri. They have the most excellent magic names. And Miri looks like Miri.
Yeah, Miri looks like Miri, which is so funny. And Jin looks like Jin Gataxius. Super weird. Like a completed cat. Yeah.
With those pants from Kamigawa.
Yeah. And just glistening oil everywhere. The phyresis. But Jin was like the sweetest cat. I was like, oh, does Jin like to be picked up? And Lou was like, yeah, he does, but only this one specific way.
You got to hold him like a baby.
I was like, I'm just going to pick him up like I do. And I picked him up and he was like, this is great. I'm so tall right now. This is awesome. And he's just the sweetest cat. Like, oh, man, it was so great. Just snuggled that cat as much as I could. It was funny because we show up at the party and, you know, there's that meme about people that go to parties and immediately try to find the cat. And like, that's kind of what Mike and I did. Like, we showed up and saw a cat and we were like,
I was like, I might end up hanging out with this cat. Yeah.
But that was a great time. Super, super fun. And then we bounced back to our place and got a good night's rest.
Yeah, I stayed up somewhat late, re-sleeving my deck that I was unhappy with the sleeves that it was in because they were kind of...
So funny, dude.
It was awful. I wish I had done it earlier. I meant to do it earlier, but... It got done in time, so that's what counts.
You were like unsleeving a deck and resleeving a deck until like 2 in the morning.
Maybe. That might have happened, but it was fine. And then, so we got up, we got some breakfast, we rolled in to registration.
Oh, and we were at the hotel that the tournament was at, which was like...
incredibly
so
convenient.
Choice, dude. So fucking convenient, especially because my phone and my Apple Watch just kept dying the whole weekend, so it's like they didn't charge the first night, so I was just running on fumes of a battery. So it's nice to pop up and be able to like plug shit in. So we hit registration, we hit the players meeting, all that kind of stuff. That's basically when they like run through, make sure nobody's missing, fill slots where people are missing. And then we get paired into the first pod. I will say this is my other little bit of salt for the weekend. I may have a few that pop up, but this is a little grain that happened that morning. So they were doing deck checks. You could sort of elect to go up to the head judge, bring up your deck and be like, hey, you know, I got some proxies in here, or I have an alter that might make my card not look like how it normally is. Yeah. Or something like that. And they basically gave you an opportunity to like go up and talk about it with the head judge. So I had purchased this copy of Galadriel's Dismissal, which, if people don't know it, that's from the Lord of the Rings holiday box sets, those gift sets. It's a really awesome instant. One mana, you phase out a creature, and then you can overload it for 4 and phase out all of the creatures that a player controls. Like, it's just a super flexible piece. I really, really love it, especially in my Sisse list, for like removing a clutch stacks piece and then having it come back in and lock down other people. It's great for that. But those cards are fucking dookie quality and so fucking curled, man.
Super curled.
I spent like a week trying to uncurl that card before we traveled down for the tournament, and I still got down and the head judge was like, I would prefer if you could get some kind of like MDFC, like stand-in card is what they sort of wanted you to use if you had it. He's like, get some kind of MDFC and pop that in. And I was like, all right, well, I'll go run up and like, you know, grab something from my room. And then they were like, player meeting starts in 4 minutes. If you're not in your chair, we fucking boot you from the tournament. And I was like, fuck, dude. So thank God Mike had extra cards on hand and let me borrow a Flusterstorm and slot it in.
Because the deck registration, you were allowed to edit right until the player meeting started, basically. Yeah. So you could still register and tweak that one card to swap it out. So
if you haven't done a tournament that uses Top Deck GG software, the Command Tower software, it's fucking sick. Yeah, it basically fully integrates with Moxfield, and you just link a Moxfield list to your name, and then you can tinker with the Moxfield list and it stays linked as your list that you've uploaded. So if you do need to make 1 or 2 card swaps right before the tournament kicks off, it's very easy to do. And you know, it's just like that full integration. I don't think it was my first time using it, but holy shit, it was amazing.
Yeah, it works pretty effectively. Every once in a while, like a pairing takes a little bit, but that kind of is what it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, we got into our first pairings. And how did your first game go, Sam? I don't know that we're going to go through all of them, just so everyone knows, but we'll probably talk about the stuff that was interesting.
Throughout the event, we were both trying to take notes as often as we could to sort of record what happened in our games. Some of my games were more complex than others, and I'll have more to say about those, but
my mental fatigue kicked in after game four, and so I don't have notes for 5, 6, or 7.
That's
or 5 or 6.
Totally fine. I dropped after round four, so
yeah. So that also is a big thing about the tournament that I keep forgetting and I'm always reminded of, is like you're actively thinking for 5 games in a day. Is they're right, each at 80 minutes, right? So
yeah.
Whatever that count of minutes is, with just like a 5-minute break in between for them to count the results, basically.
Yeah, there's no lunch breaks or anything like that. I mean, you have to like kind of come prepared.
We managed to get an order of some food in.
Yeah, we'll get to
in
that.
Rounds, but yeah.
So my first round, I was playing against a Yuriko deck, a Tivit deck by our listener, Zach, which was super fun to meet you, Zach. I hope you're listening right now. And then in the third seat was Lua Stardust, my good friend, on Winota, and then I was in seat 4 on Sisay. So we have Yuriko, Tivit, Winota, Sisay. I kept a hand that was Ignoble Hierarch, a fetch land, Kinnan, Arcane Signet, Urtai, which we've talked about in a previous episode, Urtai Resurrected, Force of Will, and I was mulliganing down to 6. So I had a mental misstep that I pitched to the bottom of the deck. The thinking there was that I could eventually get Urtai out and use it as colors to help like springboard Sisay into higher tutor chains.
Mm-hmm. I think the misstep is the keep, though. And we talked about
Yeah,
that
we talked about that
at the time.
It's a bit immaterial, as you will see. So
yes.
Turn one, Yuriko sets up. Tivit gets a Jeweled Lotus, Gemstone Caverns as their pregame action, Mox Diamond, and a land, and plays a fucking turn one Tivit, which was insane. So first round, first turn, first play of the entire tournament. I was like, holy fucking shit. So we're all just like, welp, is this the game? Is this it? Is this game over? And of course, I was like, Force of Will pitching Urtai. So yep. I had the turn one Force of Will, which there was much rejoicing. We all like freaked out because I had that. I apologize, Zach. Definitely fucked up your game plan. I think it was right for him to play it at that time. Like, you don't really expect the turn one Force. So he's out of the game, right? Like turn one Tivit gets Forest, you're fucking out of the game. Your hand didn't really have much of a plan after that. Lua sets up a little bit. I play my Ignoble Hierarch and I get a land down. Yuriko goes next and fucking plays Bridge Street Prowler, which is a one mana like rogue or something. I don't even know its types. One black mana rogue. When it ETBs, gives a target creature -1/-1, kills my Ignoble Hierarch. So now I can't play my Arcane Signet. I don't have the mana to get into my Kinnan. And I had top decked a Relic of Legends, which is a really fantastic artifact in Sisay decks because it can tap for any color and you can tap your legends to get mana of any color too. So I had this like amazing setup between like the Kinnan, the Dork, the Arcane Signet, and the Relic of Legends. But it was all built on the back of this one mana Dork. So I did not expect to get got that early. I feel like it was kind of karma because of all the pinging that I've done with Marath in the past. So Yuriko player does that. I'm fucking out of the game. Then it goes to Tivit's turn, and Tivit is like, well, the only other play I have is to play this Dranith Magistrate, which locks Lua out of the game because Yuriko can fucking ninjutsu in past the Dranith. And Yuriko had actually already hit the board by this point. So we just had this like really funny game where turn one, the Tivit player basically gets knocked out. Turn two, I basically get knocked out. I never draw another land. I do get a Bird of Paradise at some point, but Yuriko just drops a Cursed Totem and turns it off and just kills it eventually with some direct damage. And I think eventually I also got a Mox Amber, which was completely turned off because I didn't have any legends
on
board.
That's so brutal.
And Lua on Winota just could never cast Winota and could never build that board because the Tivit player had the Dranith Magistrate. So the Yuriko player just ran away with the game. And I think it was, I believe his name is Kohei, And he's like one of the big Yuriko players. If you've ever seen a $500 like budget Yuriko CDH deck, he is like the brewer behind that. Amazing player. He had a triple sleeved deck that was all in, I believe it was all in Japanese or Korean. Beautiful cards, everything fucking foiled out. Absolute, just like a beautiful deck to behold. And he just stomped us, and we all had literally nothing we could do. It was a pretty fun game. All that aside, you know, it was fun to get like the turn one force and stuff like that. And the game was still pretty long because it took the Yuriko player a while to like grind us down. I think at one point, because Tivit died and I died, Lua did end up getting like one Winota flip off of Winota, but it just wasn't really enough. It was too little too late.
Yeah.
By then, the game was done. So yeah. That was my first round. Pretty fun. Got the turn one force, but man, having my Ignoble Hierarch get eaten just fucking dumpstered the whole game.
Yeah, that'll get you. Being stuck on one land, it's no good. What a harsh introduction to tournament two, where like it's like, yeah, someone if you've got one mana source and one extra mana source, someone might just remove one of those if they've got the card for it. They're gonna make that call.
I just don't expect the ping on turn two. You know what I mean? Like you don't expect a Fourth Street Bridge Prowler to come down and fucking zap your dude. That was a game where I walked away and I was like, well, these are just kind of circumstances of the game. I felt good with my plays. I felt great with the mulligan that I kept. And I think when I'm going forth, you know, I had gone through some hands that were very like mana rock heavy, but against two blue decks going forth, I was like expecting Mystic Remora or, you know, even turn one Rissic or something like that to come down. So I continued to mulligan deeper to this hand that had some turn one interaction and a plan beyond that. And them's the breaks, man. Yep. That's just what happens.
Yeah.
How was your first game?
My first game was great. It was one of the most interesting ones of the tournament, actually, for me, I think. But it was also very long. We ended up drawing in time for the game. And it also set up what I feel like was a theme for me throughout the weekend and a very good lesson that I punted a lot. I took the Punt City name and I really took it for a ride. over the weekend was good, which is nice because like I honestly just came away from the weekend feeling like I had a lot to continue improving on and, you know, could have played more through things and continued improving. So it was nice. But the first game I kept a Mox Diamond, a Gemstone Caverns, a Cradle, Soul Ring, a Smothering Tithe, a Plateau, and a Swords. Oof. Yeah.
That fast and, Smothering Tithe, dude. That seems pretty hot.
I was in seat one as well. So I pitched the Gemstone to the Mox Diamond. So my turn one was land, Mox Diamond, Soul Ring, Sissei, and then turn two Smothering Tithe. And it made it around for a rotation. So I got like five treasures off of it, or I had enough mana on after the rotation to get one activation of Sissei. But then somebody besieged the Smothering Tithe. Oof. So I had this kind of opportunity to go get like a one power thing with the amount of mana that I had. So I set up for a Ragavan, and I realized later I probably should have looked for a Skrelv just to protect later turns.
Yeah, for the protection.
But the board just develops like crazy. So to my left, there's a player on Elish Norn, the one that doubles your ETBs and turns off everybody else's ETBs. So we talked about like how you're looking for a mana source and then a reset. Well, for the dockside lines, it stops the mana source. And for the untap lines, it stops a lot of the resets, which are like Derevi coming in, entering the battlefield and resetting. So that effect just on the commander alone turns off a lot of the deck. And that's painful when you expect it to be on someone's commander. Like it's going to come out.
Yeah. That's a spicy deck. Elish Norn, Mother of Machines is fucking cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was blinged out too, and it had the sleeves, and she had the like life counter for it. It was awesome.
Was that Phyrexian Fangirl? That was Anna's deck, right?
That was Anna.
Yeah, Anna was crushing it. That list was spicy.
She played it really well. It basically, we keep going. The game keeps developing. We're playing pieces. At one point, there's a Manglehorn There's a Archon of Emeria.
Ugh.
So that's a rule of law effect, and lands are coming in tapped.
Yeah.
So Manglehorn artifacts are coming in tapped. There was the commander that was turning off ETBs.
Ew.
There was a Phyrexian Censor as well, which is you can only play one non-Phyrexian spell a turn.
Ugh.
So even before
brother.
The Archons,
brother,
there was...
brother,
what's
ew,
that?
Brother, what's that?
What's that, brother?
Brother, what's that?
That's how I was feeling. We had been saying that a lot on the drive down, and then that's exactly how I was feeling when I was sitting next to the deck, too, because just... painful piece after painful piece kept coming
yeah.
out. But one of the things that had come out was the initiative had been introduced to the game by one of the cards from that Elish Norn deck. And that was a really interesting piece because one of the pieces in that is you get to tutor up a basic land.
And notably, Mike plays one basic land in his Sisset list,
which I was super excited about. I always love that. And that one land was actually critical in getting to a Sisse activation of five
nice,
mana.
Dude.
Otherwise, it only would have had the four. So that was cool as well. The problem was I ended up going and getting Derevi with that Sisse activation as the reset, which was turned off when I needed to go for Kiora or Tyvar, basically, to untap something instead. So I punted that game away because I used the activation. I was able to go to combat and try and get one trigger, but it just wasn't enough. I needed it ended up shaking out as being one mana short on what I needed. So I had this opportunity to at least go for a win. There could have been some more interaction, but it didn't seem like it at that point. The table was pretty tapped out.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, from there, the game just kept going long. And we all slowly were dying to Elish Norn beats, but it hit time, went to end of turn, and she wasn't able to close things out. I did also die in that game before the rest of it. After my win attempt, I got beat to death first. So it was interesting because you're not allowed to influence the game anymore at that point. You become an observer of the game. You're no longer a player in the game.
Yeah, you got up and walked away and like found me and we chatted.
Yeah, because you're not supposed to like point things out or, you know, try and influence the politics of it or anything, or try and steer it towards like a draw, for instance, which would be advantageous for you at that point. Like, you can't do anything like that. So for me, the only way I could do that was by stepping away from the table during that time. But it was an interesting game. And then for game two, it was very similar for me where I got out. I went for a strong opener. I had like an early Rhystic Study and an early Esper Sentinel. I ground a crazy ton of value. Eventually, I got a Bowmaster out and we were like shooting back and forth. There were other people with Rhystic Studies. And I got to a point where we had a player at one life. And multiple people were very close to a win attempt. The person across from me was pretty much out of the game. They were pretty behind on a Sisse point. And then there were two people going for win attempts or very close to being able to do them. There was a Tivit player that had been drawing cards all game and sculpting a perfect hand, basically. I got to a point where I had one player dead on the next Bowmaster's trigger. So if anyone drew an extra card. And another player that had a Rhystic out. So there were all these triggers that I needed to put somewhere. And I didn't put any of them on the player at one life because I was relying on that player's interaction to help stop the player right after me in turn order.
It's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah. And I made the call to not kill them. And then the player going for the win attempt removed the Bowmasters. In order to try and develop their board more, but not necessarily to go for a win. They just wanted me to not have it. And then right after that, the next player was able to Born Upon a Wind and win. Now that the Bowmasters was removed, they could win at instant speed on top of that.
That's interesting because I don't often think of Bowmasters as the kind of stacks piece that needs to be removed to open up a win. But I did see that as a common thread this weekend.
Yeah. Well, there was a Bowmasters and there was also a 2020 Orc army. Because that many triggers had gone through. So the player that removed it was at four life and the other player was at one. So that's why they needed to remove it because they couldn't go down on life like at all And a lot of their mana sources were like an ancient tomb and stuff.
Yeah.
So they were really pressed for life. So that's why they decided to remove it. It was a reasonable thing to remove in that moment. The player at one life had a mana vault and a mana crypt out as well. So they got to their turn, and on upkeep, they needed to Born Upon a Wind on top of those life loss triggers
To win
in order to
speed.
Go for the win. So that's how they won on top of that.
That's amazing. What a good win.
Very interesting, very cool game, very fun to be a part of, really interesting lines, crazy things to try and consider, but definitely a game where like I had this strong advantage. It was indeed my game to lose.
Yeah.
And I did in fact manage to lose it. In both of my first games, I felt like I had these moments where I had a strong probability of winning. And I don't know if anyone plays like chess, but the chess evaluation of like Stockfish, it'll give you kind of like a bar, and you can see when a piece moves, the bar will shift to like what your win percent chance is. And there were definitely some moments where my, you know, win percentage was like well over 50, well over 60. And then I make this blunder and it just like floors out the, it like just vanishing downwards.
I love that phrase, my game to lose. If people aren't familiar with what that means, basically means that you're able to win in the moment, but you lose because of like a misplay, or you sequence incorrectly, or you pick the wrong thing. Like you kind of make yourself lose in that moment.
Yeah. So that was fun. But also I was like, I really got to kind of figure this out here in order to start. So I started off one loss and then one tie.
Yeah.
And how was your second game?
My second game was literally the best game that I played all weekend. So I'm on Sisse in seat one. Bailey Abner is in seat two on Timnacrom. Then we have Josh from Elder Drunken Highlander. Josh is on Toulouse, which is a funny pun, first of all, because he'd be like, I'm playing Toulouse. Ha ha ha. Toulouse is one of the new Capenna commanders that is in Esper. I'm not going to read what it does because it wasn't super relevant to the game, but it was a really, really cool deck. And then we had a Thrasios Vile Smasher player in fourth, and that was MTG Santi. So my opening hand was Plaza of Heroes, Mana Confluence, Mana Crypt.
I can love that, dude. Say shit like that.
So Vampiric fun. Tutor, Gilded Drake. So it was a really interesting hand, right? So I did a land and a Mana Crypt, 3 mana turn one. And on the upkeep before my next turn, I did a Vampiric Tutor to get a Rhystic Study, turn two Rhystic Study. Pretty awesome start. Bailey goes on to have a turn two Krom, which was crazy. And then the other two players just continue to set up. On turn three, I cast Gilded Drake and I steal Bailey's Krom. So at this point, I have a Rhystic on board, I have a Krom, and I'm just like continuing to build my board. I have like a bunch of mana going on and stuff like that. So I'm in a pretty amazing spot. Like one of the cool things about Gilded Drake in a Sisse list is obviously it's just a really flexible piece to take a Stax piece, for example, like a Dranith Magistrate or something like that. So it's no longer affecting you. But one of the really cool things you can do is steal an opposing commander, not only to get that as a draw engine, like how Krom is, but also to give you colors for legendary activations. So I cast out Sisse, and I'm pretty much in a position where if the game comes around to me again, I'm probably going to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
It goes to Bailey's turn, and this is turn three. This is all turn three. We probably played for turn three for an hour. So it goes to Bailey's turn, and Bailey is like, I think I need to go for it. Bailey drops an Ad Nauseam and goes to six life. And the Nause is like all gas, but nothing to enable it. So it's amazing cards like Breach, LED, Brain Freeze, all of like the cards that Bailey needs to win, but no mana to cast it. So Bailey is in a really tough spot. I think he had like a mana vault out with a couple mana floating off that, and a couple treasures from like a Ragavan or something along those lines. So he was not in a good spot and went down to six life on the Nause. And it was just nail biting. We were all super involved with everything going on. He's down at six life and he pushes six cards beyond when he's at six life. He continues to go. And I took that note because it was just so wild to me to have someone who's at six life doesn't see the win and is like, I think I need to push, and ends at three life. You know, he has this massive hand full of all these cards off the Nas, and he drops an Underworld Breach. So I hit it with an offer you can't refuse, which was a questionable moment because he was going to get two more treasures and what he was strapped for was colored mana. But at the same time, if he landed the Underworld Breach, then he'd get the Lion's Eye Diamond, which was in his graveyard, which he had used to cast the Ad-Nas.
You need to try and hit it.
So this whole game was just like the epitome of clean table talk. Like on every single person's turn, the other three opponents were totally clued into what they were doing and were working as like a single unit to play as optimally into what that person was doing. During all of this Ad-Nas stuff, Josh drops a Orcish Bowmasters. So he's got an Orcish Bowmasters and I have a Rhystic Study. So it's this point where like Bailey is really between a rock and a hard place, because not only is he strapped for mana, playing things and paying for the Rhystic, he kind of needs to do it because he's only at like two or three life at this point. I think he takes like maybe one Bowmaster trigger. Then he hits a Tainted Pact just to try to pull some kind of win out of this. He really pushed for it and just, it was a shitty Nas and just did not get what he wanted. But holy shit, it was an epic turn. We were all like sweating for him, like on the edge of our seats as he was going through this Nas. Every single decision was so exacting because there was a Bowmaster on board and I had the Rhystic, which was huge, right? So this is a very long turn and we play it out. At some point, he does get a Dockside off and we're just continuing to fight through. And he ends up getting to a point where he's like, I think I need to pass. He's sort of like, I might be able to win on my next turn, but I have to make it through a Mana Crypt trigger. And I can't get hit with any more Bowmasters because I'm going to fucking die if that happens. At a certain point, Josh has shifted his Orcish Bowmaster triggers from hitting Bailey's face to hitting like key creatures on board. Like he's trying to take out my Krom. He disassembled some of the other creatures that I had on board. I think I might have had a Kinnan or maybe a Mana Dork or something like that. You know, because like Bailey is kind of out at this point and could possibly just die to the Mana Crypt. So he's sort of like allocating that damage elsewhere to
putting him on the threats, putting those triggers on the threats.
So Josh sets up on his turn. He's got the Bowmaster out. He casts a Dranith and he ends up passing. At this point, I'm still thinking about my win. I've drawn a shit ton of cards. I think I ended this game with maybe like a 30 card grip because of all of the Rhystic Studies that didn't get paid for. I had a plan where on my turn, I could basically tutor out Aminatu, flicker the Gilded Drake, and steal the Dranith Magistrate and just win right from there. So I was very prepared to like go for the win confidently on my turn. But we get to Santi's turn. And man, this turn, if you thought the turn with Bailey was insane, this turn was fucking crazy. Santi tutors three times. It was a Wishclaw Talisman, a Demonic Tutor, and he had an Imp Seal that he tutored for on turn two, which is hilarious because he untaps on his turn and draws, and like 40 minutes had gone by between his last turn. So he like forgot that he had even tutored to the top of his library. And he was like, oh shit, yeah, the card I tutored for. Like it was just that long of a round, right? So he starts to try to assemble a win. We're still pinging things left and right. At this point, Santi, he gets a Dockside, gets a shit ton of treasures, and then he hits his own Ad-Nas. I'm fucking gassed out. I spent everything I had trying to stop Bailey from winning, and the other two players didn't have any draw engines on board, so they were just stuck with what they had in their hand. So now Santi's going for it, and he fucking Ad-Nas's, rips through his deck, and compared to Bailey, it is a beautiful Ad-Nas. He's getting mana rocks. He's getting like the combo pieces he needs, but he doesn't quite feel safe enough to go super low with life because there's the Rhystic on board and because there is the Bowmaster on board. So he ends up getting a Displacer Kitten out. And this was kind of the kiss of death, because with Displacer Kitten, with every non-creature he cast, he could flicker the Dockside again, which gave him enough to pay for Rhystic, which was turning off the Bowmaster triggers. So we get to this point where there are just some like super big brain plays where Santi drops a Phyrexian Metamorph to try to make a copy of the Orcish Bowmasters to kill the other Orcish Bowmasters that are on board. Because at some point, Bailey made his own Orcish Bowmasters, so there were two on board at the time. Bailey had a Imposter Mech that was a Bowmaster. So Santi tries to make a copy of it with Phyrexian Metamorph. Aristic Draw was on the stack, Bailey Cruz his own imposter mech to make it a creature so he can it can ping itself and he can kill it so that the Phyrexian Metamorph can't become a Bowmaster. We were like, holy shit, Bailey, like the big brain play, man. But this is just the thing with Displacer Kitten is that it didn't really matter because Santi could just reset and like kind of do it again on top of the stack. So it was kind of this like losing battle. And we played that game 15 minutes over time. So we went to turns in Santi's turn. At that point, we were sort of starting a dialogue about like, well, should we just draw this game? Do you even need to play it out? And Santi's like, I think I have it. And just kept digging, kept going for it. Eventually, between all of the Displacer Kitten Dockside triggers, assembles it, gets an Underworld Breach combo, and just fucking goes for it and crushes us. And it was like 20 minutes over time. It was insane, dude.
I have one more kind of interesting game, which was the one that I was able to take my one win of the tournament in. I ended up going 1-3-2. I was in seat 4, so I was already kind of deflected on my threat level, which was nice. A player played a turn 1 fish in seat 2, which made the player in seat 3 hold off on playing all of their rocks, and I got to just develop as normal with a land and then a dork. In the second rotation, the player still didn't play any of their rocks into fish, but eventually the fish didn't get paid for that turn. I was able to play a land, a crypt, and a Lavinia.
Oh, nice. So you got the Lavinia down before
and
people.
And then a Jeweled Lotus and a Sisse. So I got to get Lavinia out before other people could play their free rocks and really shut shit down.
That's awesome.
And then after that, going into that next turn, I had a Dockside in my hand. So I was sitting there with Sisse in play and a Dockside in hand, and people this turn had started playing some rocks, like some one costed and two costed rocks. So
yeah,
we're heading into my turn, and the player in seat 2 has a Timna out, goes for a swing to try and I think trigger something, and basically they were looking for ways to mess with my board. So I swords the Timna, and everyone starts getting scared because swordsing the Timna is basically saying like, I just need everybody to have fewer cards and that's how I'm gonna win from here.
Yeah.
So there's a brief fight over the swords, and then Lavinia gets attacked with another piece of interaction, and I'm able to swan song that. So then everyone is really like, oh, okay, so we're Lavinia'd out and he's protecting the Lavinia too. So like the interaction was all locked out for free stuff against that swan song. So it eventually makes it back to my turn, and I'm able to just do the most straightforward, mana perfect, cleanest Dockside, because Dockside's only hitting for 4, but I have, I think, 8 mana at the time. So I forget exactly how it shook out, but I was able to get Dockside, have exactly enough mana to also grab Aminatu and Flicker, going down 1 mana basically, and then tutor again for Nicol Bolas, Flicker it again for 4 mana, so again going down 1 mana off of that Sisse activation.
Nice.
And then go down to Oath of Teferi to get the reset for both of them, going down like completely dumped on mana but with nobody able to interact, and then just win from there. So it was like just a perfectly clean, the simplest way, not playing through any stacks, having locked out stuff and chosen exactly the places to apply my pieces of interaction. Dude, that got me there. And it was super satisfying to get that one win. So
that's amazing, man.
It was nice too, because I had literally just punted 2 games and then sat down at a game being like, oh, I'm going 4th, this is rough, and I had misplaced my deck before this game.
I saw that, dude.
And
you
I was running around
like
a mad person looking for it. I told the judges and I told the TO immediately, and then it was found. I had literally just like left it on Tim's table, I think, so it got brought like one box up.
It was under someone else's table. Table next to me, somebody yelled judge, and I saw them pick up your deck box because I'd seen
it's
you running
crazy.
Around.
Yeah,
I and I was like, what's
like,
Mike doing? And then someone was like, judge, and lifted up a deck box.
Yeah.
And someone ran over, and I was like, oh, I was like seeing it all happen from afar.
Yeah. I was like, it's almost all proxies. So it's not like, and everyone else is at this tournament. It's not like anyone's stealing something like that. So I knew it was just misplaced, which made me feel real stupid.
Brutal.
But I got the win on it, so it was great. And then the rest of the games kind of were, I think, a lot less eventful. There was one that was interesting where I kind of negotiated us into a draw by threatening to stop the win of one person going for the win, who would then be able to also stop the other person of the win. So I was able to leverage one piece of interaction into a draw, which kept me in the tournament, which was good too. But then I didn't win out from there. So
it's an interesting thing about tournament play is at some point you do have to like kind of push for the draw, which feels weird, but it is a valid thing.
Yeah, there's this moment where you have to acknowledge that 1 point is better than 0 points. So it kind of is awkward to stop someone else from winning, but you need to do like, not awkward. Obviously, you want to stop people from winning, but you need to make it so that nobody is winning the game, not even you. Just force that draw. But
I'll touch on my third game real quick. It was Akiri Thrasios, Krom Rehan, which was piloted by Tony's coworker, Steven, which was incredibly cool and funny to meet one of like Tony's coworkers that happened to be there. And then a Tevesh Malcolm. And I think I went fourth in that one. That game, I had a great start, but I was just stuck on four mana the entire time and just couldn't do anything, man. And you know, the Akiri Thrasios player and the Tevesh Malcolm player just didn't really do much. And the Krom Rehan player was just kind of like policing the table. So not a lot happened. That game went to time and we ended up drawing. I was like so exhausted at this point because I hadn't eaten anything and I was very, very tired. So I was pretty brain dead and my patience for like slow play had completely worn out.
It had vanished.
At one point, the Akiri Thrasios player kind of gets into a fight with Steven over a Ranger Captain of Eos that the Akiri player was playing, because we were trying to kill it because there was like a Bowmaster on board. So we were like, well, let's force draws into this Ristic so we can kill the thing. And he was just really putting up a stink about it. It was weird. It was weird enough where I had to be like, we all need to calm down and take game actions because we're up against
time.
The clock right now. We also had a judge call in that one, which was called by a spectator. The Tevesh player played a Deadly Rollick into a board state where a Ranger Captain had been cracked that turn. And someone who was observing called the judge. The judge came over and it was very weird vibes, man. The judge came over and kind of like scolded the player. And I was like, this is fucking weird. And then stuck around and like just watched us play the rest of the game, which was felt like taking a test with the teacher looking over your shoulder. And the vibes were just very strange. So I'm really glad that later that night I got to have like a redemption game with Steven that was way more laid back. Got to play with Steven and Scylla and their friend Jack and just had an amazing game while we were just sort of like lobby conning it that night. My fourth game, by the time I got there, I was so fucking exhausted. Thank God I played against Shauna Gillis, who just is a disgusting Niv-Mizzet player. She dropped out like a turn three Niv.
She's not disgusting. She's just disgusting at playing Niv-Mizzet.
Yeah. Sorry. She's lovely, but the way she plays Niv-Mizzet is fucking gross. She's like incredibly talented with Niv-Mizzet. She drops out an early Niv and then just naked draws a tandem lookout off the top of her deck and drops it and is like, can anyone stop it? And none of us could. And that game was over in maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I walked out of that room, grabbed my BLT with avocado that Mike had bought us in the previous round.
Yeah,
dude, it was like just being delivered from the stress of the tournament. I like walked out and like Dan Matanon and like Tori from Scrybabies and her boyfriend Steve and Kev were all just sitting in a circle on the floor. And I just went over and chilled and ate my sandwich. And I was like, I think I'm going to drop from the tournament. And then I did.
Yep. I played some more interesting games. You know, I don't have notes on them, so I'm not going to be able to remember them interestingly enough to describe too much about them. There was one that was interesting. It was against Rebel. The game ended with a Korvald just going crazy, but it was right after a wild turn where Rebel went for a win and she protected it with the Veil of Summer first and then had two other pieces to follow up that would have basically gotten infinite mana with Thrasios. So one from there, right? And a player right next to me happened to have the Mindbreak Trap for it. And Mindbreak Trap isn't a counter. It just exiles the spell. So The Veil of Summer happened to be, like, unluckily, the thing that turned the Mindbreak Trap on. And I saw her Twitter after being like, I think I'm going to put Defense Grid in. And like, yeah, that would have done it in that case. So it was really interesting. Really interesting
cool.
game. And then an Korvald player just going huge with an Adnaz. But from there, I just lost or drew the rest of the games and eventually got to the same place as Sam. But I did play in day two as well.
Yeah, you played the morning round.
Yeah, I played the morning round, but I didn't make it to game seven because I was out of the tournament at that point.
Yeah, so after that first day, we just kind of lobby conned, like basically the room where people were playing the tournament slowly converted into just people chilling. And that kind of happened over the course of the day as people dropped from the tournament and took over space and stuff like that.
And there was also like a mimeoplasm event that was firing off. Yeah. So it was a 16 person commander with the only restriction is they all had to play mimeoplasm. So
amazing
tournament with that.
Super cool.
Which was great. I think Wounded Satellite won it. I'm pretty sure. Or
I think it was
not,
Scoop. It was Scoop Face from the Bufftown Bullies.
Nice. Well, that sounded funny. One of the highlights of the evening of lobby conning was I got to play other people's decks. And it was so fun. I got to play a Malcolm Bruce Taro list that I've since been goldfishing and tweaking and tinkering with like crazy. Shouts out to Useless Knowledge for having just like a great list that I was able to sneak like a turn, a seat. I think I was seat four, mole to four, got to get a win out of it. Just so fun playing that. I also got to play Italian list from Snapcaster V from Vaughn, which was sweet. Played that more the next day, but also an awesome experience. So really cool to play a bunch of other people's decks after being kind of like burnt out on Sisse from playing it all day. And just being like, I want to mix it up. Does anyone have something? And really ended up kind of leading to my takeaway from the weekend, which is like being ready to mix it up. Like I've played a lot of Sisse. Sure, I'm misplaying on it, but I'm also feeling pretty comfortable on it. And I've played it a lot. So it's like time to, I think, play other things to become more familiar with them. And that'll be like the next step to kind of keep growing, which is exciting.
I feel the same way too. I will just say like, you know, after the tournament, just jammed a bunch of really fun games. I was still playing Sisse for the most part, but just had an awesome time seeing other decks and playing some like relaxed casual CDH after we did sort of this main really intense sweaty CDH, sometimes literally sweaty because you're like dying in the tournament because you haven't eaten in 6 hours. But got to play some awesome games with Modanon, with Useless Knowledge. John came up for the day just to chill. Played another redemption game with Charles Mono White Guy where it wasn't a miserable stack slog, which was awesome. Then on Sunday, we got to play a really fun game with Lua and Dan. Mm-hmm. And I played a couple games with the Bufftown Bullies. And these are the only non-CDH games I played all weekend. I busted out the gigantic librarian deck that Mike brewed for me last Christmas.
Still kind of CDH.
Well, so it's funny because I was talking with Brian from the Bufftown Bullies and he was like, yo, we play this $50 comp. And I was like, what's $50 comp? And they're like, well, we have these budget $50 tournaments that we do, but people basically build it with a CDH mindset. The rule is no Soul Ring and no Thassa's Oracle. And I was like, well, I got a Soul Ring in my deck, but other than that, I technically abide by that. And it was amazing, man. Playing into this pot of like $50 comp was just super, super fun. And now it's like all I can think about. I'm like going back to all my $50 decks and I'm just like tuning them as hard as possible and starting to like bring in some of those more like competitive win cons and stuff. So that was kind of my weekend takeaway. Like I also want to brew a little bit more diversely and things like that, but man, the $50 comp game was just so fun. I was like, I think this is exactly the type of play that I want in a budget game. Like it just hit in a really awesome way. Other than that, we just stayed up super late on Saturday. We're just like gremlins at, you know, I mean, it's a lobby con. People are
a
drinking
lot of ordering,
beers and
yeah.
doing stuff. We got some like Wendy's and just like, you know, it was fun, man. Just like kicking it with friends and being a goober late into the night.
Yeah.
And then Sunday was super laid back. Mike had his first round and then we just jammed games with people into the afternoon. And the final round had two Sisses in it. Our homie Dio from the Bufftown Bullies was up in there. And then Tad, also from the Bufftown Bullies, was in there on Rog'Sai and ended up winning the entire fucking thing, which was pretty amazing that those guys had two out of the four in there. Like they're no joke, man. They got a really good group of players.
Yeah,
I love weekends like this because even though I got so burnt out in the tournament and wanted to drop and just chill, I still came away that weekend being like, I just want to play more Magic.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It's really cool when that can happen. And I want to brew more magic. Like, not just I want to play more games, like I want to do up more of the other pieces of this as well, which is nice.
Well, the funny thing is that I've been in the group chat with you and Useless Knowledge talking about that Jeskai Malcolm Bruce list, and just hearing you guys talk about it, I'm like, well, fuck, now I want to play this list too, man. So I won't copy you too much. I can't.
Hey, you go where you got to go, but
exactly. But I'll probably do something
behind
a little
me.
Different.
Then it's always behind me.
Hey, you know, love to see you go or whatever it is. I'm looking at your butt, I guess is what I'm saying. Oh, that's the joke I'm trying to make.
Brother.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it. So, you know, we kind of zipped through some of those games there. And Mike and I realized halfway through the game report that we were like, oh, we can't walk through every single game.
Yeah, we don't even know all of them.
Well, I certainly don't for round three, man. I was a literal zombie at that point.
Yeah.
One of the best things that happened to me that whole weekend was Shauna just knocking all of us out on turn four.
So you could eat that sandwich.
It's so funny because my opponents were so burnt out too. We were all just like, just doing our best, trying to get through the rounds. And Shauna's like, WinCon? We were like, hell yeah, let's all have an hour and a half to hang out.
Yeah.
But man, it was just such a great weekend. Like I said at the top, the takeaway is if you have an opportunity to do a CDH tournament, a local one or one of these bigger ones, if you've been playing CDH and you know your deck, do it. Like, you don't have to know the meta. You don't have to play perfectly. But if you know your deck well enough and you're comfortable like chatting with other players in a collaborative way, then fucking do it, man. It was so fun.
Just
I didn't
do
get
it.
Any wins, and I had one of the best weekends.
Bonus points. I do think it helps a lot to bring a friend. Like,
yes,
having someone to, you know, help get food if you're in a long game or something, that can be really helpful.
Debrief after a shitty game.
Debriefing after the games just to like take that pressure off so you don't kind of build angst between all of your games too, and can kind of like reflect on it in a little more of a positive way. It's really helpful and nice. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think I would have done it if I was going down alone. Like, the fact that Mike and I could do it together was and play the same deck or a similar list.
Yeah, that part's funny.
It was really, really fun because it was just like, yeah, we're both on Sisay. And one of the funniest things was everyone kept being like, what Sisay list are you on? Because there's so many different ones.
Yeah.
So I started calling my list Mayonnaise Sisay because I have so many white cards in it.
The old Mayo Sisay.
Now I want to lean into that even more.
It's not
like
a
Ranger
good
Captain
idea.
In.
Don't lean in. Ranger Captain, sure.
Ranger Captain's good, dude.
Yeah, Ranger Captain, sure. That's fine.
That was pretty much the weekend. Then we drove back with Alan. No traffic on the drive back.
Yep,
fucking amazing.
A smooth shot.
Alan tried to force us to watch WrestleMania and we said no. Yep. And that was pretty much it, man.
Yep, that was pretty much it. Naps and good times on the way back.
Yeah, well, no salty card this week, no salty song this week. This is how these kind of trip reports go for these conventions and tournaments. So, you know, we hope to see you guys at the next CDH event. We're definitely going to be targeting some local Boston ones and trying to hit up the local scene a little bit more, which again, our buddy Steven, Tony's coworker, kind of clued us into.
Yeah.
Super excited to just play more CDH in a tournament setting. It's going to be fun.
And it wouldn't be a CDH episode if we didn't almost go to time.
Yeah, we have gone over our time slot on this one. All right, let's wrap it up. As we end all of our episodes, a special thank you to our Salt Packet Plus tier members out there. Thank you for all the support. And this week we have Thoughtimus Prime, Rothbox, Bobo Fett, Brandon, Mouse Cop, Chameleon, Bremstone, Captain Kroz, Clearbrook, D. Beeson, Gilgamesh, Doug's Dad, Firehawk Ash, Ebes, Kylock, Pez, Vok, and JS Evolved.
JS Evolved!
Thank you so much for all your support, guys. It really means a lot. And thank you to all of the other prospectors out there for tuning in every single week to the Howling Salt Mine podcast. If you want more Howling Salt Mine in your life, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/Howling Salt Mine. We have a bunch of bonus content on there. Our Extra Salt Show, which happens once a month. It's a full-length show, where we kind of break away from what we normally do. And we do like deck text, talk about our favorite cards, do Q&A, things like that. We also have our Stray Grains show, which is our short form show that we put out. It's all of the tangents and bits that don't make it into the final cut of our episodes here. And we just launched a new piece of content for Patreon, which is called Off the Rails, which is when we just get together and kind of ramble and gush about something that we love. Tony and I recorded the first episode, and it is about Dragon Ball Z. So if you like Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Super, sorry, GT fans, this one's not for you. But if you like those other ones, then you will really, really love that. So go check it out. Another way that you can support the show is to send us your salty stories. Send them to us at our Gmail, which is thehowlingsaltmine@gmail.com, or you can submit them on our lovely website, thehowlingsaltmine.com, or howlingsaltmine.com will also get you there. We have a page on there where you can enter in stories, get them submitted, and they'll queue right up for us. And oh man, it's a great system. We love it. Another way that you can support the show is to check out our merchandise. We've got a bunch of that on Bonfire to get our shirts and hoodies and stuff like that. Or get a playmat. Get a playmat from our buddies over at Jank Mats. We love those guys. The playmats are amazing and the quality is fantastic. So check it out. Treat yourself to something nice. Another way that you can support the show is to give us a 5-star review in your podcast app of choice. We talked about it before. Google Podcasts is gone. It's dead. We highly recommend that you check out Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That is where your listenership means the most when it comes to podcast algorithms. And of course, a 5-star review in one of those areas is going to go a long way to push us even further into that algorithm so that people can find us organically in the wild. It's actually how we get most of our listeners these days. So it really, really does help. And lastly, you know, we got to shout him out. Our amazing podcast artist, Devin Burnett. Thank you for drawing this beautiful art that we rock every single week. If you're ever in Asheville, North Carolina, hit him up and get a tattoo. He's a really cool guy.
10,000 subscribers are buzzed.
Wow. Thanks, Tony. Thanks for taking a break from your musical just to jump in and record that little bit for us. We appreciate it.
Hell yeah.
Well, everybody, as always, stay salty and don't forget to draw an additional card during your draw step.
It's the Howling Saltmine.
Why isn't this just showing up immediately?
Come on. Where's the professionalism?
Right? That's what I'm saying. Come on, Google Docs. Do your job. Bring
come on,
me.
Dockelson.
Bring me to the thing. Okay.
Then there was also one more piece that I'm forgetting about.
Is it the one piece? Those game recaps will be a bitch to edit, man.
They're
going to
be so bad. I'm sorry, dude. Yeah, some of those are going to be rough.
I knew I was doing it to myself when I was watching.
Yeah, but I did some heinous things. Feel free to just butcher it up into something that isn't accurate, but still sounds fine.